The Big Picture, brought to you by Bible Society Australia, shining the light of God's Word into every corner of your world. And Sydney's Hope 103.2, there's always hope. The Big Picture, a Christian insight on the world of film, television and popular culture, with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley.
G'day, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm Mark Hadley, and welcome to The Big Picture for Monday, March 2nd. And coming up on today's show, Channel 9's Anzac anniversary series Gallipoli.
My top five date movies.
And we can tell you what the kids are watching, well, at least this week.
3D glasses on, amps to 11, screens to maximum. Get ready for The Big Picture.
Well, welcome one and all to what is in fact the very first Big Picture episode where we're basically,
woo-hoo!
I know, we should be cheering.
Yeah.
Where in which we're going to tell you all about basically what's happening in film, television, culture, and how you can look at it from a Christian perspective, how you can actually be engaged and know what's going on. And to kick off the show, we're actually going to look at the big release for the Hollywood release anyway for this week, which is the film Focus, the latest Will Smith vehicle of greatness. I'm not sure if he gets his shirt off. You can tell us about that later, Ben. But also an opportunity to find out what happens when a veteran con man starts up with an apprentice who happens to be attractive and really good looking.
Just happens to be.
At the end of the day, this is a game of focus.
Very clever.
All right, now, attention is like a spotlight. And our job is to dance in the darkness.
I didn't even feel you take that.
The human brain is slow, and it cannot multitask.
Jesus, when...
Human behavior is very predictable. I touch you here, I steal from here. I tap you here, I steal from here. I step to here. You're not gonna slap my face, are you?
Why?
You would if you knew where my hand was.
I really wanted to like Focus, Mark. But that's a great way to start. It's on the first review on Big Picture ever. Really wanted to like this movie, but I didn't.
Wouldn't it have been great if we could have started off with something that was like, please go out and watch this now.
As you mentioned, Will Smith's in this. So is Australian rising star Margot Robbie. She caused quite a stir and last year with Martin Scorsese's movie Wolf of Wall Street. But the two of them together, not so great. So look, as you mentioned, Will Smith, he's a career con man. His name's Nicky. Margot Robbie plays Jess. She's a wannabe scammer. This is a movie, so of course they meet. He critiques her skills, gives her a bit of advice like, you know, you should never break the con and die with the lie. That's the kind of advice this guy gives out, die with the lie. Mm-hmm. Now, because it's also still a movie and these are the big stars, then Will Smith and Robbie are thrust together pretty conveniently all the way through the movie. So Nicky brings Jess, their characters, into this highly sophisticated racket that's going on in New Orleans where Nicky's basically trying to scam the whole city. And then from there, it leads to... well, low points and high rollers, cool outfits, and a lot of globetrotting. But really, overall, Focus just involves these really long and dull sequences of scam artists trying to go about their business.
Is there still, assure me that there's actually going to be at least one scene in some superlative hotel with luxury and people wandering
around. How did you know? Like, some of the best parts about this is they're filmed in attractive locations, the camera works great, and it's got an excellent soundtrack. But as soon as you start saying that about that kind of movie, you sort of realize, well, there's not really much going on. So, like, Focus, it's smooth and it's slick. But really, I think the main issue for me was that Nicky and Jess, these two lead characters, they lacked chemistry, and not just lacking chemistry, but everything was largely unconvincing about what they were doing. So there was so much familiar stuff in this con artist movie, from them getting together to why are they still together to why would you want to be together to how is it that you're in Buenos Aires at the same time and you haven't seen each other for 3 years? That kind of thing. There wasn't much new, wasn't much to enliven the fact that this is a con artist movie. We've seen heaps of them on screen over the year. I was looking forward to this largely because Will Smith, I like Will Smith, I like what he does, and would have thought picking a movie like this, there's got to be something to it. But pretty much it just left me cold.
So, look, you say this genre is not unknown in Hollywood.
The con man thing.
Does it have the twist? I mean, we don't want to give it away, but you know how normally they play to a point, and well, someone's actually been conning, you know, one of the conners, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where you're right, because of the nature of it, you're looking for that all the way through the movie. And one of the better things about it is it reminded me a little bit of Now You See Me, you know, that magic movie I really quite like that. That movie that sort of took you behind the scenes of people scamming other people, and they really went on to explain how they did it. Focus has a little bit of that in it. And all the way through it, one of the more interesting things is trying to work out who was playing who. But without trying to give it away, one of the unconvincing elements of this movie is that it didn't really spark on that front. And also, you're focusing on two people who are professional liars, and yet you're meant to somehow feel empathy, feel for these people and the relationship they're trying to get into, and yet go back to the bit where they're professional liars. So they've got these issues around trust and whether they should be together, et cetera, et cetera. But there was no... It all played out a bit too smoothly for my money in the end, given all the complexities that are going on with these characters that should be there, that really, for me, was a bit too shallow.
What is it about the con man film? I mean, we, as you say, the genre just goes on and on and on, and this is just, well, not a great example, but of something that keeps on going. Why do we want to believe in the con?
I think we want to believe in the con because I think most of us don't want to play it straight. Really, like, it's hard to play it straight in life, and you think about... great con movies like The Sting. I really like the Ocean's 11 series, even The Usual Suspects, which actually played a con on the audience. Like, as we're sitting there watching it, it's actually like bamboozling us, and it knows it's doing that, and we know it's doing it to it. We like to buy into these scams, I think, because playing it straight is difficult, and it seems a lot easier to, if we could take advantage of people to get what we want, wouldn't life be so much better? Yeah. There's an attractiveness to it, and a lot of these movies make it, and Focus does it as well. It's so slick and appealing. Like, it really, like, you kind of sometimes forget that these people are criminals. Like, what they're doing is ripping people
off.
There's
a morality that sits underneath these films that is like the no harm, no foul morality.
Yes, you know, and Focus definitely goes hard with that, where it's largely an amoral universe that they're living in, that what they're doing is, well, this is a job. This is the job, and these people are suckers, man. Yeah. Like, they're asking for this, so why wouldn't you take them down?
And if they're not, and particularly, there's always tends to be. Now, I haven't seen Focus, so full disclosure here. I'm looking forward to the character who will walk on at some point, who we all know deserves it. You know, there'll always be someone who's not just a sucker, but maybe is even a bit bad.
Yeah.
And so if we take their money, that's okay.
And often speak with an accent that isn't derived from an English-speaking nation. They're usually from some foreign country. They're usually exotic and rich, and that guy is just wanting it. So, man, Focus.
What does it leave you with? What's there left to focus on?
What it left me with is a few questions. One was, what was Will Smith doing? I think Will Smith, much better than this, and he was largely without dynamics. What I walked away thinking more about, though, is just this question around, we're so attracted to people that scam others, that try to take advantage of others, that lie and deceive and manipulate. We like kind of knowing what's going on behind the scenes there, and the fact that we're not the ones being taken for a ride. But at the same time...
first is that basically they make us feel smart about ourselves.
They do. But at the same time, in real life, none of us want to be those people taken for a ride. And also, most of us seek for trust and honesty in people. So it's this bizarre world that you enter into Focus, that you walk away and think, actually, what I thought was, like, I'm really glad I don't live in this universe. And I really want people to be upfront and honest and trustworthy in a way that by the end of Focus and where Jess and Nikki, these characters, get to, you just think, oh, I don't care. But B, I'm really glad this isn't me. And thank God that on the outside, in the real world, I can trust people.
Yeah, and I find actually that these films often always move to a point where in which we have there's a moment of honesty. So in the end, they love the game.
Somewhat.
Well, you take Ocean's 11, for example.
Yeah.
There'll be a point where in which he's actually going to tell the truth in the end, and that is, you know, George Clooney is going to basically say, I love you. You know, and that's how it's going to work out. There will be an honesty. So we kind of recognize there has to be something in the end that we can build our hope on.
But then the big question is a little bit boy who cried wolf, though, isn't it? Yeah. As in, is it really honesty? Is it honesty? So for the first review out in the big picture of What's at Cinemas, Focus, don't bother.
Thank you for the distributors who provided that segment for us too, by the way. Okay, well, let's shift from the insubstantial to the, well, even more insubstantial, but with sequins and gold lame. We're talking about the 87th Academy Awards, and it demonstrated once again that what always goes well with well-dressed and occasionally, you know, interesting people is, in fact, a really good soundtrack. Now, one of our new segments, in fact, everything's new on this show since it is the first episode.
The
latest new segment that has just come in. It's so hot. Is soundtrack. And in soundtrack, we're basically going to look at the music behind these sort of great constructions, you know, whether it be TV or film. And my favourite nominee from this year's events basically was from a little-known film that just didn't get enough oxygen called Begin Again. It's Adam Levine's Lost Stars.
Just a boy caught up in dreams and fantasies. Please see me reaching out for someone I can't see. Take my hand, let's see where we wake up tomorrow. Best laid plans, sometimes it's just a one night stand. I'll be Cupid's demanding back his arrow. So let's get drunk on our Tuesday. God, tell us the reason you're just wasted on the young. It's hunting season and the lambs are on the run, searching for meaning. But are we all
Begin Again is a beautifully scored film. It's like one of those ones in which you go, oh gosh, am I looking at a musical or am I actually looking at like a greatly told story? You know, it's a great little New York sort of vignette about struggling musicians and things like that. And I actually think one of the worthy moments in the film is the fact that Keira Knightley makes up for all of those Pirates of the Caribbean films in one swift go by actually being a credible musician in this.
Right, she's the lead in this?
Well, she's the lead and she has a beautiful singing voice.
Yeah.
Mark Ruffalo plays opposite her, and it's about a person, kind of a reluctant star, and then Mark Ruffalo is sort of a down-on-his-luck producer. And it's obviously one of those sort of like two broken halves to make a whole story.
Sure.
You know, it's really good stuff. And I kind of like the music. And the reason why I'm sort of we picked it up for soundtrack is because Lost Stars recognizes, you know, in its lyrics and in the film itself that life just doesn't work out. And I even love, there's a really lovely little line in it where in which they throw the appeal to God. God, tell us why life doesn't work out, you know, because it should. We get that sense, like we do in lots of films, that it should. It should work out.
Yeah.
And yet somehow it doesn't. So there's something wrong.
Yeah, we should also point out, though, that that song didn't win the Academy Award for Best Song. But coming up later in the show, we are going to play the song that did pick up Best Original Song at the Oscars this year.
I kind of know that you are looking forward to that song more than you
are. More than that song just then. But what I'm even more looking forward to, if that's humanly possible, which I think it is the next segment, Mark. The next new segment on the first edition of The Big Picture. Now we're going to talk about now showing on TV, and you are going to take us into the trenches of miniseries Gallipoli. Now this is Channel 9's contribution to what will be one of the biggest screen trends of this year, I kid you not, the celebration and commemoration of Anzac efforts during World War One.
I was just 17 years old. What did I know about war? They said it was our duty, the right thing to do for king and country. We signed up to fight Germans. But here we were, on the other side of the world in a place we'd never heard of. Four mates. In a place called Gallipoli.
It's very hard as an Australian not to feel something about Gallipoli. I mean, we're, Anzac Day has, you know, for recent generations, including mine, and I know I'm the oldest person in the room.
Just, by a long way.
Thank you very much.
That's not true.
Really, we've actually spent... Actually, it is true. We've actually spent our lives growing up commemorating Anzac Day. You know, and so to come to the point where we're 100 years from the landing, 1915 to 2015. So, yes, this is a timely series. And Channel 9 sort of benchmark series, Gallipoli, is about a guy called Thomas Tully Johnson, or Tolly, who it's played by Cody Smith McPhee. I don't like hyphenated last names. I think, frankly, it shows indecision. What do you think?
Okay, that's a side point. Can we keep going with telling us more about Gallipoli?
Anyway, jeepers. So Cody plays a guy called Tolly, who's 17 years old, and he lies about his age in order to follow his brother into the war. And so the series is literally built around the 8 to 9 month period at which the Anzacs spent in Gallipoli. It doesn't follow on the Imperial forces to France. It doesn't sort of take us through the rest of the war. It's just all about this iconic peninsula. And it is a fantastic sort of 7-episode extravaganza. In fact, I actually our producer, sitting on the other side of the panel, who we can't refer to because he's a dentist or something, we can't show his face. Fernando was almost going to buy this, and I think that's a pretty high level.
Fernando was going to buy it, people should definitely go out and get it.
Now, of all the things that could happen with Anzac Day, I think this is probably one of the best ones. So if you're actually going to watch some of the Anzac television, Channel 9's really sort of scored a big one. There's a couple of reasons for this.
Yeah. How much, before we get to that, how much Anzac television and film-wise screen stuff is coming this year?
Massive amounts. Every network has commissioned at least one, probably two, or even three different Anzac series, specials, things like that.
Commissioned as in they're making their own content this year, every station in Australia, right?
Absolutely. So Channel 7 has got Gallipoli, The Power of 10, which is about the various Victoria Crosses that were awarded just in that one small part of the campaign. And ABC's got their own sort of version of Mythbusters for Anzac Day.
What?
Yeah, well, it's called Lest We Forget.
Anzac Busters?
Oh, no. Lest We Forget is about more basically reference. The myth, you know, exactly how much is truth and how much is falsity. Even the Bible Society, and I know this because basically I was commissioned, the production company I work with was commissioned to put together a documentary called The Bullet in the Bible about Christians.
Advertising on this program, Mark?
We just did.
Whoa, just neatly wove that in. Sorry, so you've been writing a script for a Bible Society production about Anzac Day.
And about then, it was actually sort of undetectable, but now I'm out there in the open, so thanks very much for that. But it takes us back to the show itself, and that is that this is
the Gallipoli show. The Gallipoli show we started off talking about, the miniseries on Channel 9,
is actually superb TV because I actually had film in Gallipoli. Okay, so I spent a fair bit of time there and around in France and places like that.
Yeah, I visited Gallipoli years ago as well.
You would be stunned at the geographic realism.
Yes.
It looks exactly like Gallipoli looks, and yet it's filmed in Australia. They must have spent ages trying to get this right, and it really is good. But more
importantly, so are we talking like Band of Brothers on a quality TV?
Yeah, it's kind of...
I might have gone way too far on that reference, but...
jumped right over.
But you're talking about 7-episode TV extravaganza based on warfare.
I would say it's movie quality stuff.
Okay.
Okay, it's very good stuff. But more importantly, it's actually accurate. Now, that's the weird thing, because we had Anzac Girls last year, which was a bit of a travesty. You know, different things got
dropped. Why
so? Well, because it telescoped a lot of the events. You know, you had nurses dealing in Cairo with patients who are coming in screaming from the battlefield, which happens to be about, 5 days steaming by ship away. So generally speaking, they'll have got over their screaming by that point. They're not going to be covered in the mud still. You know, there's stuff like that that was happening that is just really out of place. Whereas Gallipoli, this one is actually based on Les Cullen, who's the leading historian, and he co-wrote the script, and so it is really good stuff. But here's the tension. It's still got a lot of TV stuff in it too. So you've got these sort of stolid British officers strutting around. This is what they're like. And historians actually are really questioning this idea that it was all these British generals who didn't really understand what was going on. Now, they were guys who were on a steep learning curve. There's no doubt about that. Also, it presents the sort of, salt of the earth Aussie bloke. And true, there's a wide range of people who actually experienced Gallipoli, from those who found out that they were heroes and others who found out that they were cowards.
So who do you think is going to watch this show? Is it for older folks who are looking back? Is it for the youngsters? Who's going to get into Gallipoli?
Don't show your kids unless you want to be on nightmare duty for the rest of the evening and probably the week. There is some very graphic stuff. But that said, I'd take a teenager to watch it and sit down and discuss it, you know, and think about this, because we've actually got to think about what it actually means in our society to live and die for something, which is why I kind of like the series I worked on. Okay, sure. So the Bullet in the Bible one was great because we were talking about what it actually meant to believe something, you know, and this guy was a Christian, a fellow called Elvis Jenkins, and it follows him right through the war and how his faith sort of survives. And that's the thing I'm a little worried about with this series. Just as a caveat, there's a little bit of a stereotype going on that World War One destroyed the faith of people, and that's just not the case.
Okay.
Organized religion took a dive historically after World War One, simply because lots and lots and lots of people who went to church died. So they did not come back to church, and they did not have children who were raised in church, and they did not train people. The leaders of a generation were cut out. And that's what really kicked religion. There was a lot of questioning of what was going wrong, but just as many people were going, you know, thank God I've got faith.
Yes.
You look at the memorials, they're all Christian memorials. You know, people are saying things like, in the arms of God now, and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So to wrap all this up then, this discussion on Anzac TV and movies and things that are coming this year, and finishing on Gallipoli, the Channel 9 series, final words on recommending this to people?
I think watch it. I think maybe it's a great DVD present. I think it's the sort of thing you might file away and almost watch occasionally on Anzac Day. Film and television are immensely powerful things, and they're often benchmarks in our lives. You know, sort of the memories, the sort of things that we build our lives around.
Yeah, sure are.
Okay, and so in time, you know, we'll think about those sorts of things that we stayed up late for, or those sorts of things that we were the first film we saw when we went out. And in fact, events of our lives are built around. And that basically brings us into our new segment, Press Record. Because in Press Record, we're going to share our stories of film and television. I don't mean ours. I mean yours.
Not just ours.
we have a million.
Yeah, after but, 2 weeks, it yeah, really starts going downhill.
We want to share your stories and how they actually, you know, fit inside your life.
Yes.
And to kick off this segment, the first show, we're going to hear from Maya and what sounds like the worst date of all time.
I was working for a company in the city and one of the guys rang me up and said, we should go and have a work meeting. And I was like, okay, a work meeting, that sounds good. And then he said, well, actually, I've got to review a film. And so I was hoping maybe he could come and review this film with me and then maybe we should grab some dinner afterwards. And I thought, oh, okay, that sounds all right. Anyway, my friend Heidi was with me at the time and she said to me, that's not a meeting. She said, that's a date. And I said, it's not a date, it's a work meeting. She's going, no, no, Maya, take it from me, it's a date. I was like, oh, okay, well, we'll see. So I went into the city and we met up for coffee and we're having a nice chat. And suddenly he looked at the time and he said, oh, I'm really sorry, we're going to be late for this film review. Quick, we've got to go. We've got to go now. So I was like, oh, all right. So we jumped up and we ran down George Street and we ended up going to the wrong cinema. So we had to turn around and run the other way. Anyway, we ended up getting to the movie and, you know, excusing ourselves as we squished past people and sat in our seats. Anyway, the film turned out to be Wilde, which is the autobiography of Oscar Wilde. And unfortunately, it does have a few explicit homosexual love scenes. This guy's leaning over and saying to me, I am so sorry. And he's whispering it. He's apologising throughout the whole film. And I think he was worried, you know, I'd really be offended. And so it was really quite comical in the end. Anyway, we got out of the film and he says to me, oh, I am so sorry. Please forgive me. You know, I didn't know the film was going to be about this. And I was like, no, it's all right. Please, you know, it's okay. Don't worry. And he said, let me make it up to you. You know, I'd like to take you to see another film. That very night we were going to see another film. So we looked at the board and what was available, and the only one we were really interested in seeing was Alien 4, which is the fourth installment in the Alien series. Probably not the most romantic date night movie one could choose. So we bought the tickets, and we decided we should eat some dinner before we go in this time, so we weren't, you know, obviously hungry throughout the film. So we found a place to eat and we went in and we were talking a lot. We were getting on quite well. We're chatting away and we ordered some food and then we checked our watches and I don't know if we must have misread the times or something, but we realized that we were running late now for this film. So the food had just arrived and we didn't have time to eat it, and we had to jump up again and run down George Street and find the cinema and go in. At some point during the film, I went out and bought two choc tops and had to pay for them myself. And I think it was the only thing we ate all night were these choc tops, which is quite funny, really. It does sound that this would be possibly the worst date night of all time, and, you know, that I'd never see this guy again. But as it turned out, at the end of the night, he gave me every number he had, gave me his phone and mobile, and he even had a fax number and a pager at that time, and he gave me all these numbers. And I did end up calling him, and he's actually my husband now. So it does have a happy ending.
Well, that is in fact...
yes.
Mm. I know. Would you marry?
Yeah, he's a keeper, that guy. Yep.
Well, that's our story. And basically what we're going to do is we'll be putting up an email address. You can have a chance to actually share your stories too. We'll be bringing more of them as the weeks go on.
Yeah, that was a great start to the press record segment. But a very fitting intro into what is this week's top five list.
And our top five this week begins with our top five date movies.
Mm-hmm. Top five date movies. So the criteria I thought we'd go with for top five date movies this week, just to explain how we put this list together, is that this is a date movie. So contrary to Maya's story about the worst date ever, if she'd only waited for this list, it would have been way better for her. But these movies were selected based on these are movies that men and women will enjoy. I repeat, men and women will enjoy. And to narrow the list even further, we thought maybe we should dive into movies that are either set around a date or date-like situations where people are getting together, the romance is building, that kind of thing. So here begins our top five list. Let the countdown start.
Five.
That's the best sound effect ever. I don't know if I could top that. Date night. Number five is Date Night. So I think that's a rather obvious choice. That's a movie that was out a couple of years ago with Tina Fey and Steve Carell, who I think are two of the funniest people that exist. Those people are amazing. So getting those two people in any film, I think, is going to work. But they played a married couple who were going through a bit of a humdrum patch in their marriage. They decided, let's go out for a date night. Of course, as what happens on a date night, as you'd expect, is they end up running away from henchmen in New York and tearing through Central Park and trying to save their lives and their marriage. And they also encounter Mark Wahlberg without a shirt.
Yeah, well, that's actually, I think it's a contractual obligation for most Mark Wahlberg films. He has to appear without a shirt somewhere.
That's very true. So while I found the film really funny, what I really liked about it and why it's on this list is because it's actually about a married couple. And there aren't too many films about putting the spice back in or saving a marriage that we get. Usually we get movies of descent into divorce and that kind of thing. I thought this movie was great.
We'd be happier on our own. Yeah,
that's right. So that was number five.
Four.
Gets me every time. Four. Number four is a movie called Once. Now, earlier in the show, we played a song called Lost Stars. That was from a film called Begin Again. The guy who directed that is a bloke called John Carney. He made a movie years ago called Once, which, I'm sorry, Mark, but I think Once is way better than Begin Again. And basically, he did what he did in Begin Again years ago in Once, but he did it better. And this was set in Dublin. It was a lot less...
If you're going to be old school, sure.
That's right. Well, way back in 2006.
Yeah.
But basically, this is a movie set in Dublin about a guy and a girl. He's a busker, and she has come from another country, and they kind of get together. And it's a movie largely about not very much, but also about a lot at the same time. One of those movies. There's something of a weird romance going on because she's married, but why I picked the movie is because it doesn't quite unfold the way you'd think. So a lot of movies where this happens, where a guy and a girl get together and one of them is married, you can often count down the moments to when the affair is going to begin. So I'm not trying to give it the game away, but one of the reasons I really like this movie and recommend it to people is it talks about the possibility that exists when chemistry sparks are flying, but also demonstrates how you can exercise restraint and also marital obligation as well at the same time. So pretty powerful movie. That was number four, Once.
Three.
I better stop laughing every time that thing happens.
It's never going to get old.
Yeah. Right. At number three, Before Sunrise. You know, remember Before Sunrise?
Isn't it? No, sorry, I'm thinking of Tequila Sunrise, but no, please go.
And you're the first person that's referenced Tequila Sunrise, that Mel Gibson movie, since that movie came out.
And in fact, so people will know, just in case, we don't actually in any way support drinking games, but if we actually mention a Mel Gibson film for the foreseeable future, you may take a sip of coffee.
Yeah, please. Anyway, let's get back to Before Sunrise. So this movie was out about 10 years ago. Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy were in it. It was directed by Boyhood director Richard Linklater. Boyhood was big around awards season this year. This movie was about two people meeting on a train, and this they're going across Europe, and they decide after having this really cool conversation full of banter and philosophical remarks and that sort of stuff, they decide to get off the train and spend a day together in Vienna. And it sounds like, I think a lot of people might already be tuning out right now and saying, there is no way I'm watching that movie. But as far as a movie that captures the moment where two people come together and all those possibilities of romance, and yet you're also weighing up the considerations of who am I as a person, who are you as a person, what could we do with our life? I think Before Sunrise, which also is filmed like it's happening in real time, actually lets you sit in on that moment in a relationship. I was blown away by it. And I think even dudes can get into this. It's a romantic drama, romantic comedy of sorts, but even dudes can like it. Yeah,
I think, frankly, if you can find a film which a guy can happily, you know, get points for watching a date film and enjoy it at the same time, maybe even have more to say than the girl at the end of it, then that's got to be a winner.
Well, what you're going to get more points for is what's coming in at number two.
Two.
We're going old school, friends. Number two is Bringing Up Baby. This is a movie that was made in 1938. That's right, people. There were movies made in 1938, and you can still watch them, and they're still great.
On the intranets.
The horse and cart will bring it round to your house. But Bringing Up Baby starred Katharine Hepburn and Cary Grant. For my money, it's one of the funniest screwball comedies ever. I think, actually, it might be one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. And it's funny just for the sake of being funny. It's effortless. It's got Katharine Hepburn as this kind of ditzy socialite who somehow wrangles Cary Grant, who's this sort of stuffy professor, into this crazy kind of, it doesn't make sense, but it involves a leopard and involves a wedding that might happen. It doesn't sound like much, but if you want points
No, you've got an African feline in there. I'm sure it's got something.
But if you want a movie that's old school, classic, black and white, and the politics around marriage and whether you should poach someone else's spouse come up in this movie, and it's largely treated for laughs, but I think in comparison to a lot of other screwball comedies, they actually play this game a lot better. So Bringing Up Baby is a corker on a Friday night.
And you've also got the opportunity to get credibility for saying, you know, I watch black and white film.
Yeah, that's right. It's an excellent date night, but not
of
as
my
good.
Many films.
That's
that
right.
I,
so that will,
many of them are black
that
and white.
That will lead to an amazing date night. Well, what will lead to an even better date night is what happens at number one.
One.
And the winner is at number one. Can you guess? Can you guess, Mark?
Oh, I'm on the edge of my seat, which is because it's actually broken. Yeah. That's one. But yeah.
Mate, When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, yeah.
It had to be when Harry Met Sally.
It had to be.
Thank you. But an honorable mention, I think, goes to Annie Hall, that great Woody Allen film from the 70s. But I didn't pick that because so many people, as soon as they hear Woody Allen in a sentence, will run for the hills. Whereas When Harry Met Sally is a great, 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 great movie about men and women, about the stereotypes, also about the insights. There is good observations for men and for women, which often doesn't happen in movies. Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan's great. It's before Meg Ryan went really sappy and just it was all about her hair. Instead, this movie is an excellent portrait of the possibilities and the tensions around men and women getting together. It shows the downside and the upside. And I thought for a comedy and for a Hollywood comedy, there's a lot more realism and a lot more like emotional depth in this movie. And it still remains funny, even though it was made like 25, 30 years ago.
I was going to be really upset if you didn't get at least one Nora Ephron film in there because... Oh, no, seriously.
Wow, that's the most girly thing you could say.
Well, you know, it's the feminine side of me coming out. But I've got to say that the Nora Ephron film library, you know, of which I have, you know, probably all of them.
You're the one.
I'm the man. Is basically like a tribute to real characters.
Yeah.
Now, even though they, on the one hand, they do feel kind of a little sappy, like they are love stories. But on the other hand, you're always meeting people who have real issues about dating, who have real problems. And in When Harry Met Sally, Harry is just, you know, almost bordering on misogynist in the way he actually carries on his relationships. And yet, and he's unaware of that. And he learns about that. And I figure films are in which you can actually learn that we are different, you know, that men and women think differently and need to come to a point where one is sacrificing for the other, which is where this film ends. And it's probably no better point at which to cue out When Harry Met Sally insert.
I've been doing a lot of thinking. And the thing is, I love you.
What?
I love you.
How do you expect me to respond to this?
How about you love me too?
How about I'm leaving,
Doesn't what I said mean anything to you?
I'm sorry, Harry. I know it's New Year's Eve. I know you're feeling lonely, but you just can't show up here, tell me you love me, and expect that to make everything all right. It doesn't work this way.
Well, how does it work?
I don't know, but not this way.
How about this way? I love that you get cold when it's 71 degrees out. I love that it takes you an hour and a half to order a sandwich. I love that you get a little crinkle above your nose when you're looking at me like I'm nuts. I love that after I spend a day with you, I can still smell your perfume on my clothes. And I love that you are the last person I want to talk to before I go to sleep at night. And it's not because I'm lonely, and it's not because it's New Year's Eve. I came here tonight because when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible.
You see? That is just like you, Harry. You say things like that and you make it impossible for me to hate you. And I hate you, Harry. I really hate you.
And that's the number one date movie, friends, on the top five list of date movies, When Harry Met Sally. Corker.
Time for our second installment of Soundtrack for this week. And how could we mention the Oscar for Best Original Song without actually playing this year's Academy Award winner, Common and John Legend's Glory?
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure.
To the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus.
Now, I haven't seen this film, and this is one of my huge regrets.
What is wrong with you?
It is. The weird
Selma
thing
is fantastic, and I don't know why it wasn't nominated for Best Picture, and I don't know why more people aren't going out. Actually, they are going to see it, so I'll stop on that rant. But that song was good. That song's good. I think it was a bit deliberately crafted to be inspiring, whereas Selma is inspiring, just full stop. Like any movie I think about Martin Luther King and civil rights movement, it's going to be like that. But one of the best things about Selma, it is inspirational. As a Christian, it's inspirational because there are few films that depict Christians on screen being Christian, going about their convictions and showing how they live for those and actually living for God, not for themselves. Selma does that. So as a Christian, I came out fist pumping and punching air and trying not to punch people and high-fiving and just great. So that song, not too bad, deserved to win an Oscar. I think Selma should have got more notice at the Academy Awards. But overall, in short, Selma is inspiring. Boom.
Okay, so what we're actually going to launch into now is a segment we hope that families, households will find really helpful.
Gather round, families. Gather round the
embrace
airwaves.
Embrace the warmness of your radio right now or whatever electronic device you're using to sort of watch, view, play, whatever.
You mean like a wireless?
Yes. I don't know. Some streaming device. You might be sitting there with a nice warm glow.
Why
family,
wireless?
Sit down. I'm never going to get this intro done, am I?
Please, no.
No, okay, fine. So anyway, if we actually get anything out of this, I think that it will be that you will walk away armed to say, you know, I know what's happening with the kids. Because there's lots of films or lots of television programs which your family might be watching that you're never going to see. If you can engage in the conversation, then you're halfway there. If you actually even know, if it's on your radar, if somebody doesn't say to you, you know, what, Millennium Man was a film? Okay, and that's so old, I don't even know why I picked that out.
What?
I know. If you know that there is, in fact, has been a third Expendables and will probably be a fourth, if you know that Terminator is now hitting around to a fifth one, even though you haven't seen 1 through 4, then we've done our job and we've given you an idea of what to think about.
Yeah, and this week we've picked Project Almanac. So this is a new film that's at cinemas. Open last week, time travel movie, sort of shot like it's like a handheld video. So it's about a bunch of teens who, as tends to happen, they found a time machine in their basement.
Oh, what
who knew?
What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly happen?
Dressing important. This is gonna be so friggin' awesome!
David, we'll never have to worry about money ever again.
After taxes, that's $53,876,522.
Congratulations. You're a winner.
Me personally, I'm gonna take it easy at first. You know, I'm gonna get a yacht, you know, then see what happens. Go from there.
You guys do know that $1.8 million after taxes isn't enough for what you wanna do. You should save it. Pay for college.
I'm sorry, I thought you just said 1.8.
You guys only got 5 out of 6 numbers.
Why did you put 44? Because that's what you put down. That is not what I put down. I put a 9. That is a 9. That's 49, Adam.
You have to go back and do it again.
I am not winning the lottery twice.
Now, this is a big question. Is this the film that your teens are going to be watching, or the film that the industry wants your teens to be watching at this point? We actually got to go off and see it.
We did. It was a lovely date night.
I love to go
popcorn,
out with you.
Chop tops, yeah.
We didn't so much share popcorn as you ate my popcorn, yeah. but I feel that's worth noting.
But you finished up at the end of this thinking that this is more the industry trying to tell kids what to watch, as opposed to the kids going to rush out and definitely see it.
Yeah,
and by kids, I mean young adults.
True. And basically what we want to say here is that this is deliberately constructed for the teen market.
Yeah. But I didn't feel it was anywhere near as manipulative as you did.
No, I'm old and crotchety. You know, these sort of things happen.
Yeah. So it's not deliberately crafted for you.
No, it's not. I think actually it will sit in the team mind pretty well.
Yeah.
So basically, when these kids get their time machine, they do really teen things
machine. I kind of like that about the movie. But I know you didn't really, but I did. I like the fact that instead of how do we sort out, I don't know, world peace or stop hunger around the planet. Or meet Jesus. Instead of that, no, I'd rather just go back and redo a do-over on my maths test or chemistry test. That guy did it like 10 times.
Yeah, and it never occurred to him that what he could actually do is just go once and change the grade in his book.
Yeah, time travel movies. But overall, I quite liked it. I'd be surprised if teens race out to see the movie.
It is basically the teen release, though. So if your kids are sitting down and looking at, you know, what's on the cinemas and they decide they're going to go out with their friends, they're probably going to have a go at Project Almanac. And I figure that what you're going to want to be aware of or be across is the fact that this film is very much about the classic storyline, human beings should not have godlike powers. We're not gods and we shouldn't behave like gods. Because predictably what happens is when you start mucking around with time, you don't have the perspective that God has.
No, is that true? You mean the history of time travel movies have demonstrated that to us?
Well, you know, if there's any number of films out there in the teen space already that talk about when we take on too much, you know, more than we really should have. You know, Chronicle is my favourite from last year. Chronicle is a much better film than this one, but it's like a great example of what happens when teenagers get superpowers. How do they actually behave? And what do we have the responsibility? Do we, in fact, have the character necessary to exercise this level of control?
Yeah. And as a final note in Project Almanac, I just add that if parents were concerned about what their kids are watching, Project Almanac was remarkably... It's got some language and some sexual scenes in it, but it was remarkably tame for this
much
kind of movie.
Much more innuendo than content.
Much more innuendo. Yeah. And actually, the lead characters are quite nice. They're quite largely decent teens to focus on. I like that about the movie, that you're actually going to watch and be involved with a bunch of kids who are nice. That's a good thing to finish on Project Almanac.
And that's basically, you know, our big tick for that. Well, moving on from what the kids are watching this week, we want to talk about what's basically coming out. So we figure that we'll provide you with a summary of all the things that are being released, and you can tick your television guide or film, you know, preview list accordingly. So coming out in film, Ben, what are we looking at?
Okay, bang, this week, also out of cinemas, is a movie called Seventh Son, which Julianne Moore, she won the Oscar for Still Alice. She got the Best Actress Oscar this year. In a world away from that Alzheimer's drama, she's in the latest, one of those fantasy movies that are based on a best-selling book that the kids really liked, and you have to make a movie about it because that's just what you do now with these kind of books. That's what Seventh Son is. Julianne Moore's in it. The most interesting thing about it, because it looks really boring, is that Julianne Moore and Jeff Bridges are in it and it's the first movie they've been in together since The Big Lebowski. That's a film nerd note, but that sounds way more interesting than Seventh Son. Also out at cinemas this week, Unfinished Business, which stars Vince Vaughn and a bunch of other dudes. It's a bromance. Expect really loads of swearing, loads of sexual scenes, pretty much MA-rated stuff. Guys who go on a business trip across Europe. If you like like really potty mouth bromances, this will be your movie. And finally, on really small distribution around the country is a movie called That Sugar Movie, which is made by an Australian actor called Damon Gammo. It's a documentary, a little bit like Super Size Me. Remember Super Size Me?
Yeah, it's time to do it again. Why not?
Yeah, I know. This time, it's about a high sugar diet. But judging by the trailers, it actually looks pretty good. If Super Size Me had never been made, this might be Super Size Me. Yeah. But it's on limited release around the place.
And to be honest, in that way, that Super Size Me has been out of the limelight for long enough for us to hear the same
story. Oh, yeah, it's been decades now, at least. Mate, what's coming up this week for you?
Well, look, in the small screen, the world of the small screen, I've just got to dig in quickly and say that this is not this week, but it was last week.
Okay. Wow, first segment and last week.
I was going to say DVD release. February 26th saw the release of Boyhood and Whiplash.
Man, I really want to see Boyhood.
I know, Boyhood is a fantastic film. Basically, an epic production. It is the life of a child actor, really, because it's filmed over 12 years, and so it's using the same people to basically follow through in a realistic way. You get that.
So the movie is 12 years long?
Yeah, well, 12 years in the making. How's gotcha. That? So it's the angst of really growing up, and I think that's worth seeing. Whiplash is a phenomenal film about a prodigy drummer and his teacher, and how the pressure to succeed can be more than the value of succeeding.
That's right. What lengths should you go for greatness?
Absolutely. And so on March 6th this week, the epic event, The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1. People will be lining up at stores, you know, to get this on DVD and Blu-ray. So that's coming out. We're going to talk more about that next week, so I'm not even going to get into that now. But look, if you want to look at something that's probably talking about great returns, this will really tell my age. ABC Sundays and Saturdays, we're seeing both the return this week of The Book Club.
Wow, great note to be finishing our
honestly,
show on, Mark.
I'm going to say the reason why you should check out The Book Club is because The Book Club is a great way of actually seeing what is out there in popular fiction. If you really, you don't have to read the books. You can actually
don't do that anyway. I just see the movies.
Yes, thank you. That really separated
that guy.
Us.
Okay. Yeah, good. And what else is coming up?
Also coming up this week is a fantastic documentary for Four Corners. So tune in to Apple's Broken Promises. Now, this is just a great way of seeing what our iDevice world has actually delivered, not just to the people who get the shiny devices, but to all the people behind the shiny devices. And I feel like there's a wonderful insight to be made here about third world production. There's also an incredible opportunity for us to consider the real cost. It's not just hundreds of dollars to own one of these things. It can actually be lives. And so that's really worth considering. Also say Network 10 has a fantastic series to check out. Starting the following Sunday at 9 p.m. is Empire. Now, this is a little-known series in Australia, but it hasn't got much play, much sort of interest level, but it is a great story about the Black American music empire. And, in fact, all of the trade-offs that have been made to make that the great thing. We see the cool beats and we see the guys sort of
the hippity and the hoppities.
Yeah, we see all that sort of stuff going around with
I
the
can
bling.
Dig it, daddy-o.
But what you basically got is the roots to that. You know, so the empire that leads up to that in terms of early black music and then following through to the present day is a great series well worth checking out. And that's pretty much what's coming up this week.
Okay, that was this week. Now, next week on The Big Picture, coming your way is dun, 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 the screen trend this year of artificial intelligence and the top 5 list of movies you can get really cozy and snuggle up with. That's what's coming on The Big Picture next week. I'm Ben McKechin.
I've still been Mark Hadley. Thanks very much for joining us.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production and part of Hope 103.2's family of podcasts and vodcasts.